Hi homies, Manny here from the School of Homeopathy. Hope you're doing good. Eugenie asked me if we had anything we could share with you guys, and so I've supplied a recording for you to enjoy, some teaching from the School of Homeopathy, a gift from us to you. If you're ever interested in studying homeopathy, check out our website. We have courses for beginners, for those that want to become a practitioner, or for homeopaths that would like some continuing professional development or postgraduate training. Get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. But for now, enjoy this teaching and get inspired. Thanks so much. Bye now.
Okay, so Mappa Mundi, you will have studied it a little bit already. So essentially, we don't need to go over all the introductory stuff too much, but we'll do it a bit. Has one of you got a good a good kind of grasp and a good definition of what you think the Mappa Mundi is?
It's combining the four elements into the different remedies in some way.
Mm-hmm. Remedies and patients as well. Okay good That's definitely true. So the Mappa Mundi, it's also called the circle of elements by Jeremy Scher refers to it that way. He uses it a lot too. So if any of you do go on study with him, you'll already have a really good grounding in Mappa Mundi. So it's kind of designed to bring a focus to the inherent forces in nature and how they are expressed through humans, especially in states of sickness. So it really ties in with the concepts of homeostasis. Rather than being in a homeostatic balance when you're ill, your symptoms often express themselves in a tension of opposites, in which the patient expresses symptoms that seesaw from one pole to another, for example, from chill to fever, in an influenza. And we've all heard a lot about that. It's COVID-19. Mm. So the Mappa Mundi can be used as a guide to the salient homeopathic information presented by the patient. And it highlights the dynamic and characteristic symptoms because, when they're in flux or in polarity, that's often symptoms that are more dynamic. And we know from Hahnemann and the Organon that these are the important symptoms. Otherwise, these can quite easily get lost. When you're taking the case, you get a lot of information and it's really important how you work with that and how you use that creatively. And there's so many systems now that it's so easy to get lost. So it's quite nice to have something that's just quite basic and quite old and ancient, and to kind of have as a you can always use that, you know what I mean?
If you had a timeline, you say phlegmatic is, pregnancy, and then you go to birth, childhood, sanguine, round adulthood, choleric, melancholic, old age. Could you actually plot someone's timeline around it and what the symptoms they're having and the depth of it?
Yeah. I mean, the other part of Mikhail Yakir's plant system is, she has columns, which are the different subclasses of plants. And they go from feminine to masculine. And then there's rows, which are ages of development, according to a psychologist called Erik Erikson, who was a student of Freud. So they're the developmental ages of man. And if you can discern where a patient's sort of never been well since state comes from, and whether they express themselves as a particular kind of age, then that does map onto the Mappa Mundi very well. The phlegmatic temperament, as you said, relates to infancy or even womb-like states where you don't really have a vessel of your own. And it's very easy to be drawn to the other side, the choleric archetype, who provides structure and firmness because you're lacking in those qualities yourself. So absolutely, and we will come to that. So that is a really useful way to use it. And it links into the plant maps, and it also links into the mineral maps and the animal maps when you look at Mahesh Gandhi's work. So he's someone who's heavily influenced by Mikhail Yakir. He uses the four temperaments and elements in all of his maps. And he's sort of the next big thing really at the moment. So we're moving into a phase of homeopathy where all of these, the Mappa Mundi principles are kind of coming back into fashion, which makes it very interesting. So the tension of opposites is an important part of case taking and analysis. And you'll hear Karen talking about it a lot when you work with her and when you see her case analyses. So like I said, we're always looking for dynamic aspects, and where symptoms are polarized or even contrary shows where the energy is in the case. So like take calcarb or mollusks as a family. They, you know, on the one hand, the animal has a shell in which they can feel, you know, on the one hand, safe, cozy and protected. And then on the other hand, they can feel trapped, suffocated and closed off. So the shell is like the constant in that, and it can be expressed in one from one pole to the other. So Mappamundi is a model. And this is like a little, you know, some of this presentation was Mishra and Manny made it. So I'm going to skip through these introductory bits, but it gives a nice little history and sort of a little introduction to different maps and different models. So the first, start with the number one, and that represents oneness, holism, and totality and unity. And if you're in that kind of state, then you're probably not going to need a homeopathic consultation. And then when we go to two, the first map that comes to mind is the yin yang, which we all know so well. So we have written there the split, yin and yang, polarities, primary and secondary action. So we can sort of go back to the Organon where Hahnemann talks about primary and secondary action. He talks of, gives an example of like a hand placed into ice cold water. First becomes very cold, and then as you bring it out, it becomes very, very hot and much hotter than the other hand as a kind of secondary action. And then models of three, we have like the Vitolkus model of mental, emotional, and physical, which is really derived from the Kentian hierarchy, where, you know, mentals and generals have sort of primacy in the case analysis over particulars. And then we've got the three miasms of Hahnemann, the Sora, psychosis and syphilis. And then in astrology, you have three sort of types. You have cardinal, fixed and mutable types. So the cardinal types are Aries, Libra, Cancer and Capricorn. The fixed types are Leo, Aquarius, Scorpio and Taurus. And the mutable types are Gemini, Pisces, Virgo and Sagittarius. So they all kind of share qualities like cardinal types are, they're the ones who get the projects started. They have the kind of spark of energy. Think of Aries, which starts the zodiac. It's all about the individuality and making a bold, courageous start. It's very Aries. The fixed signs are much more about maintaining and like using the energy to really achieve something. And the mutable signs are more about changing the energy, making it, transforming it in some way. So accepting that things always change, that they never last. And each has a kind of positive and negative quality associated with it. So models of four, we have the four elements and four temperaments. And of course, the four seasons, which map onto the Mappamundi and the four directions. Models of five is like Chinese medicine. They have five elements there. So instead of having air, you have fire, earth, metal, wood and water. So three of them are the same. Instead of having air, you have wood and metal. That also corresponds with the pentatonic scale in music. Models of six. Models of seven, you've got Sankaran's seven levels, the seven rows on the periodic table, seven deadly sins, the diatonic musical scale, the chakras. So seven, you can see, is a bit of a magic number and going through various types of culture. Then we get to eight, which is, of course, the full Mappamundi circle. So when it was originally being used and being conceived by the ancient Greeks, and even probably before them, because they borrowed a lot from the older cultures, you had the four temperaments, really, the choleric, sanguine, melancholic, and phlegmatic. And in astrology, they used the four elements. And at some point, I think it was Joseph Reeve, a homeopath, I think he's still around, but he's, you know, gone very, very quiet. He had the genius to sort of put the two together and to see them, to see like the sanguine as a combination of fire and water, to see the choleric as a combination of fire and earth, etc., and to superimpose one map upon the other. And he was one of the person who taught Misha, John DeMonte, was a follower of Joseph Reeve. So he sort of brought it back to us, brought it back to homeopathy. And this is the, I've forgotten what this map's called now. Do any of you know the name of it?
Is it the Enneagram?
Enneagram, yeah, perfect. There was a talk about the Enneagram recently in the Society online conference.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, another interesting one. And it's what David Lilly's really into. Yeah, shame we didn't get to hear from him recently. But yeah, there's nine planets as well in astrology. And then 10, that would be the chakras, right?
The tree of life.
That's the tree of life. Nice. And the 10 commandments, 10 miles.
The Kabbalah thing.
Yeah. Oh, the Kabbalah. Nice. Good. I'm learning a few, which I like. So one of the things about Mappamundi is that, and homeopathy in general is, especially from Hahnemann, is that he observes nature. You know, you observe nature and the way it behaves, and you understand that man is a part of nature, and we cannot actually really behave in ways that contravene natural laws. So for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And that's what these like polarities in the Mappamundi are telling us. So yes, the Mappamundi, it predates the classical Greek period. Could be an early Egyptian idea. Empedocles was the guy who really conceived of it and worked with the idea. And then Hippocrates was the, you know, the first to use it in a more medical setting, as I understand it. And we know Hippocrates, you know, made the assertion that you can treat diseases using the like principle or the use of contraries. So even though the Hippocratic Oath is, you know, a well-known part of the allopathic model, they don't talk about the fact that Hippocrates also states the principle of homeopathy that Hahnemann developed. And the system was actually used and underpinned medical diagnosis until the 1900s. And then in the Age of Enlightenment, you know, all the sort of the word now, it's empiricism. Empiricism was, and vitalism were the things that Hahnemann really stood for. And, you know, empiricism is just like testing things. You don't need a theory. It's just testing and observing what happens, you know, exactly like you do in homeopathic provings. It's more dealing more with the subjective. So you can get a body of empirical data and research, and that's not really considered scientific anymore because it's not, you know, placebo controlled, double blind, etc. But it's, you know, I would say it's still a scientific, you know, it's still a form of science. So the Mappamundi provides us with a map with which to navigate, understand, and make use of polarity. It organizes the four elements and temperaments onto a circle, plotting pertinent homeopathic information alongside each aspect, so that we can perceive where our patient's disturbance and its opposite compensation are. It can be of practical use in case analysis, allowing you to see which polarity is highlighted by, for example, the food cravings, the modalities, the organ affinities, and the psychological characteristics. So you can use it in a vast number of cases. Some people only give you symptoms and they don't go into their, you know, their inner state, whereas other people don't give you any physical symptoms and it's all about the, you know, their mental emotional state and their response to the world, and it's all about the words and the language that they use. So it's got quite an overarching application. It can also help to differentiate remedies that all seem to cover the case symptomatically. You know, when you repertorize and you put in six rubrics that really cover the core themes of the case and you get 10 remedies to differentiate, you can use the Mappamundi then to, you know, as long as you know, have a sense of the dynamics of each remedy, you can go through and say, okay, well, Natrum Muir is certainly has an earth water dynamic. The grief and the emotions and the kidney and bladder affinity go with water, and the earth, the dryness that they can get. And it's also kind of comes down into the melancholic realm with the emaciation that you might get from it. And then, you know, the opposite, it's really the sanguine, and they don't really express that side very much. They're more rooted in the melancholic side, and whether they go more watery or more earthy probably depends on where they are in the cycle of their Natrum Muir state. Okay, so you can, there's different ways in to the Mappamundi. One way is to think about what it would feel like to be in that sort of natural environment and to kind of get a kind of feel for the energy there. And the other way is to, as for me anyway, is to use astrology and the themes that you get from astrology, which I'll go into a lot more. So we've got lava, molten metal, you know, the choleric types. What kind of remedies do you think of when you think of a choleric type?
Nux vomica.
Nux vomica. What about in the periodic table? What would you think?
Mercurius.
Mercurius has a choleric side for sure.
Asperus.
Cuprum, nice. What was the other one?
Phosphorus.
Phosphorus. Yeah, I'd say phosphorus is much more of a sanguine type, actually. So they do have some similarities, like they both have an affinity to the blood. And I suppose with they both have a hot component. And so you can think of them, things are quite interchangeable in the Mappamundi. But I would say the metals in general are quite choleric because they're a lot about commitment and work and industriousness and achievement. Those are all quite choleric qualities. And, you know, they're like the lawmakers and they want to do well. They're ambitious. They want to strive towards achievements. So those are all quite column eight characteristics in the periodic table. Like ferrum, metallicum, think of ferrum, hemoglobin, blood, forcefulness of the metal. And then what state do we see our ferrum patients in? What would they come with to the clinic?
Depleted anemia.
Anemia, exactly. So they've gone to the phlegmatic state through overdoing it. Because when you're anemic, you've got no energy, right? Yeah. And phlegmatic state is all about lying down and not being able to do anything to a certain extent.
Somebody says, let's say a healthy Nux Rom.
Yeah.
You'd still want to see them in the choleric quarter, but you'd want to see them near the middle.
Yeah.
I don't get how everyone's sort of on the outside and you bounce between one pole and another. Surely most people drift around somewhere in the middle, don't they?
Yeah.
Getting more extreme or less extreme and more centered and balanced.
Yeah, when, let's say, you're an Nux Vomica and you have a particular sensitivity, they're very sensitive people, actually, and, you have a week of work that's really full on, and then you go out and you go for a rich meal and you drink a lot, and then the next day, you're screwed. You've got the worst hangover, the worst headache. You can't get up, you can't move because everything's spinning around. Because you've pushed yourself and you've pushed your sensitivities, you've gone into a locked polarity, a locked kind of state. So actually they've done too much and then they've kind of locked down into a state which is probably more phlegmatic because they've overdone the choleric side.
But if your Nux Vomica has Nux Vomica and is let's say that's all that's wrong with them, that is some nice and easy case, they have that and then they're better.
Yeah.
They will still be sort of a Nux Vomica.
Oh yeah.
But much more near the middle. So they're sort of is that right or
yes. Yes, they'll be in balance. Which is, you can perceive that as being in the middle for sure. They've got everyone has, and there's a nice thing about using a birth chart. You can see that most people have a balance of the different elements in their chart, whereas some people will have a real skewing towards one element. And that might mean that they are in sort of less balance potentially, and they're more likely to go into imbalanced states then.
So if somebody's got majority fire and then water and they have no earth.
Yeah, that would mean that it could mean quite simply that they, have quite a sanguine disposition because it's a combination of fire and water.
Not having earth?
Not having earth is like a lack of grounding, a lack of routine, a lack of support potentially, less structure. And things remain in the more, the fire realm is more to do with the imagination and, the inspiration, and the water realm is much more to do with the intuition and feelings. So those two, you think of fire heating water, that's a real boiling kind of, they're on the boil all the time and they can't bring that down. They can't sort of necessarily turn that into something with structure or something that's solid. That's what earth is about. It's like making something practical. So they would struggle with that potentially.
Yeah.
Like Kurt Cobain had no earth in his chart. He was all water pretty much. And you can, he was a real vessel for, a whole generation, and water can channel things and is intuitive about things. Mm. But without the earth, there was nothing rooting him.
Rooting.
Yeah. So you can think, with choleric, you can quite simply think of Cuprum, the general, Ferrum, the officer, armies, institutions, hierarchies, that kind of thing. Phlegmatic, it's a combination of air and water, so it's a bit like mist or vapor. There's no boundaries as such. It's moist, and to use rubrics, it'd be flabby feeling, quite calcarb, cold perspiration. They tend to lack firm opinions and they're not so good at standing up for themselves. They can be people pleasers. They can be a doormat for other people, essentially. But then on the other side, they're very laid back people and they'll do things for people and help support others. And so, you know, there's always the different sides to them. And in the sanguine temperament, which we've been talking about, you know, Misha talks about a spouting geyser or a tropical rainforest as being, you know, nice images to use. The personality types are youthfulness, mirth. You know, if you think of rubrics, it's like mirth, hilarity, vivacity, playfulness, naivety, youthful quality. It's got an adolescent quality. And a melancholic temperament is much more like old age, restraint, wisdom, reason. And also, yeah, like digestion plays a big part there because it's about consolidating. So when the food gets to the intestines, it's all about recycling and using up. The sanguine temperament is all about spending resources. And you have this expansiveness and discharge. You know, like Lachesis has a very melancholic sanguine dynamic because they hate any restriction, which is the melancholic side. Remember, like the other way of looking at the melancholic sanguine is too open or too closed. So you have this like closed quality. So anything that restricts the Lachesis patient makes them want to discharge, let go, release. Vitolkas talks about it as being like too much stimulation looking for an outlet, the essence of Lachesis. So here's a little, some examples of polarities then. So this is an easy one because we've just been talking about it. Mirth, liveliness, hilarity, desires company versus solitary, absorbed in thought, misanthropic. Which axis would that be?
Sanguine, melancholic.
Perfect. Dominated, victimized, abused versus dictatorial and aggressive.
Phlegmatic.
Yeah. Leadership, duty, responsibility versus seeking approval. Yeah, other way around. Yeah, perfect. Jealousy and envy versus acceptance.
Ooh.
Sanguine.
Yeah. Sanguine, melancholic, or water, earth, isn't it?
I'd say the jealousy and envy is quite strongly melancholic.
Is melancholic?
Yeah, because it's sort of, you're like, with jealousy, you're kind of holding on too much to something and you're brooding on it. And so that's quite a melancholic thing to do.
So it's more dry and cold rather than the passionate sort of jealousy that you might have with sanguine, is that right?
Yes, that's right. It could express itself with some fire for sure. Yeah, so that's, you know, things slip around a bit when you're, especially when you're dealing with psychological characteristics. They're not always as simple as you'd like. But when you do get, like the case I'm going to show you, you know, it's quite rooted in the physicals, and that helps when you're using map. So you've all seen this nice map. Okay, so this is more like the astrological stuff that I've been working on. So when you look at astrological fire, you get...
Can you send us?
Yeah, I'll send you this very document. So astrological fire is like, you know, a universal radiant energy, because that's what the sun is, basically. It's creative force. Without it, there wouldn't be any life. And so the qualities are excitability, enthusiasm, dynamic, spontaneity, wild, turbulent, uncontrolled, passionate, reckless, and extravagant. So you can see when there's too much fire, that's the kind of quality that there is. It's conscious. So in astrology, you have like a polarity between the sun and the moon. The sun is to do with like consciousness and individuation, as you know, to use the Jungian term. So it's about, the sun is about bringing things into illumination. You have different aspects of your psyche, and the sun is like the kind of container for them all. So it's the ego, essentially. And the moon is the subconscious. So the feelings that you have, and the moon reflects. So the moon's always reflecting the light of the sun. It doesn't have its own light. And it's always shifting with the lunar cycle. It's a shifting of light relationships, basically. So the moon is always reflecting the sun. So the qualities of the moon are of self-reflection, changeability, and it's more to do with your inner soul than your outer ego. So you can see when there's too much fire and it goes to a negative expression, it's self-centeredness, pride, too much ego. There's a need to use energy, which can lead to burnout. If someone's got too much fire and nothing grounding it, then they have a tendency to do that, to get into burned out states. Too much enthusiasm, very vigorous, impulsive, unrestrained, overconfident, overpowering. It can cause destruction. So you see what I've done as well. I don't know whether you've been introduced to Peter Fraser's books yet, but he has a book which is about using realms. Yeah, using realms in homeopathy. Nice small book, really cheap. It's in his set of different animal families and various philosophy books. So he has the realm of the sky, the realm of the earth, of the underworld, and of the sea. So you can quite easily fit those onto the Mappa Mundi, which is what I've done. So fire goes with the sky realm. This is where it can get a bit confusing, because you think of air as being sky. But basically, you know, the heavens are in the sky, and the heavenly realm is very much represented by fire. You can see the importance of fire in our own cultural evolution. Like, our first religions were sun worshippers. There is no life without the sun. And it was probably the thing that sparked the kind of cognitive revolution that allowed us to become human as well. There's an interesting book that talks about how our brains enlarged because we were able to use fire, and that allowed us to cook food. And then we got a lot more nutrition from cooked food, or certainly a lot more energy from the food than eating it raw. And so, yeah, it's certainly one of the things that sets us apart from all the other intelligent animals out there.
I wonder why they say then for other carnivores, then it's got to be raw meat diet is the best, if you're saying that for humans, actually cooked meat was a major leap forward. It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was. So basically, what the book that I read was talking about the fire and the central place that it has in the tribal communities. And it was talking about how the hearth is sacred. Like, in those communities, it's kind of acceptable to have different sexual partners, but you can't invite someone else back to your hearth. That's the, like, absolutely fundamental to the family. And when we had fire, you could spend all day, the men could spend all day out hunting and not bring back anything, and you could still have a nutritious cooked roots for your meal. Whereas if you couldn't cook the roots, then you'd just be sat there all day eating, you know, eating stuff that doesn't really give you the calories that you need. It's the calories that you get a lot more from when you cook the food, because you kind of start off that process of breaking it down. That's this guy's theory anyway. It's an interesting book. It's called Catching Fire.
Gentle on the stomach.
Cooked food. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's, you know, when you look at the, you know, basically I'd encourage you to just look over and over the different qualities of each aspect and temperament, so they become ingrained in you, so you know straight away that fire element has to do with sex, libido, and love, and the heart. So when you get down to here, you look at the astrological signs. So Leo, this is all from like medical astrology textbooks, by the way. So Leo is to do with this area, the heart. So angina, locomotor ataxia, hyperemia, these are all like diseases that affect, you know, that are under the rule of Leo. And Leo goes up here in the sort of radiant energy. It's ruled by the sun. They have pride and enthusiasm, etc. The affinities of the sun are the vital fluid, so the actual energy itself, distribution of heat. The spleen kind of goes across to the sanguine temperament, but I've kept it there just to be sort of transparent about it. And then Uranus goes here because it's a combination of fire and sky, and Uranus is very much to do with electricity and the electrical side of fire. So it's spasmodic, electric, explosive. And you'll see from here that the central nervous system, so the affinities, this is from Misha's work, the brain, heart, arterial circulation, nervous system, eyes, and vision. So when there's like convulsions and things affecting the nervous system, that's usually fire, air. And it also has an affinity to the brain via Aries. Aries is like fire, but it's also the head. And you can see here that the affinities of fire are the brain. So you can think of meningitis. It's like inflammation of the meninges. That's very much in the fire realm.
And like high blood pressure, because it affects everything.
Yeah. Yeah, and heart disease. You know, you'd be looking at something with a strong fire component.
Do you use all the signs? Because I see Sagittarius isn't here. Would you
Sagittarius, I put in the sanguine temperament. So this is a map that I've put online, and actually I'll probably just use this from now on because it's easier. But if I click over now to the sanguine thing, and I can give you the link to this.
That's good.
Oh, there we go.
So this is the sanguine temperament, and we're kind of skipping around now, but that's okay. So you can see the qualities that you know pretty well by now. And, you know, it's good to remember it as being open, expanding. And that's why Jupiter goes there, because Jupiter in the chart is all about expansion. You know, it's the biggest planet. It's all about where you have, you know, good fortune, benevolence, and you have an outlook on life which sees promise, which sees adventure, which sees opportunity. And that's why it's kind of contrasting to Saturn, which goes in the melancholic temperament, the opposite, because Saturn's all about seeing the restriction, denying yourself, you're having to work to a structure, self-criticism. So they're opposites in that sense. So the affinities are quite similar. It's the blood, the heart and arteries, but also the skeletal muscles and the spleen. When you look at Live Jupiter in astrology, you can see that it rules arterial circulation, which is great because that's very similar. And it has some other rule, you know, it rules over other things in the body too, including the liver. And Sagittarius in the body. So in medical astrology, each planet rules over physiological processes, and each sign rules over like anatomical areas. So Sagittarius rules the hips and thighs.
What book would you recommend for medical astrology?
A good question. I would recommend going on a course by Gabriel Blass. He's the guy who taught me most of the medical astrology stuff. So yeah, I'll go back into his notes and see the books that he recommends. And if you remind me, I can let you know. So the other planet associated with the sanguine temperament is Venus. So Venus in astrology rules the throat, kidneys, also the venous circulation and homeostasis. So there's, you know, the side, this kind of Venusian side to the sanguine temperament is the sort of, you know, in a way, the extroverted quality, because it's all about relationship and it's all about harmonizing with others. And, you know, like the sanguine types love to have company. They want to be, they're open and outward and they want to have company, whereas the melancholic side is much more, they want solitude and they revert to that. So Venus is about cooperation, compromise, giving, beauty, love, comparison, how we make ourselves and others happy. It's about pleasure, sharing, socializing, expressing affection, seduction, attraction, balance, harmony. If you think of Aphrodite, it's sexual lust, flirtatiousness, whereas Jupiter is more the kind of expansiveness, the optimism, the freedom, that side of the sanguine temperament. And if I scroll down a bit, you'll see in this document I've assigned the different temperaments and elements to rubrics in the repertory too. So that's also another good way to learn. And eventually there'll be hopefully an update synthesis that includes these additions. So when you repertorize, you'll be able to see the different elements or temperaments coming through. So you can see there's mirth, naivety, optimism, openness, vivacity, euphoria, extravagance. So all of these are rubrics that, you know, define the temperament quite well. Adventurous, affectionate, amorous. And we have the physical rubrics, the time. Remember, you know, it's the hemorrhagic type. So if you've got people where there's hemorrhage, so like phosphorus, another reason why it's sanguine is because there's a lot of hemorrhage in the remedy.
Is that the archetypal sanguine remedy then for phosphorus, really?
Yeah, good way to remember it. Yeah, definitely. They open and extroverted. They want to make lots of friends, and they're too, you know, they're too diffuse. And when they're kind of burnt out, they want to go to the desert island and be on their own. So they go to the melancholic side eventually. Hyoscyamus is also has a sanguine side to it, with the kind of overt sexuality. That side, you can kind of see the sexuality as being fire or sanguine, I think. Okay, and then you can use the back key to go back to the main map. Hopefully that works. Yep. Okay, so we're kind of dealing with the upper hemisphere here of the hot remedies. So you can think of them as like all three being hot and these three being chilly. You can see these as being like more conscious at the top and these as being more subconscious. If I click in the middle, it'll take you to my maps, and probably should have started with this one when we were talking about astrology. So you can see all the placements that I've made of the different planets. So Mars, obviously, you can see the association of Mars with the choleric temperament, given that what we talked about with iron in the blood and the hemoglobin and the soldier and the military side, all of that is there, an achievement. So you can see Jupiter is the main planet with sanguine because it's all openness and expanding. Venus is also there, but Venus comes down into the water element too, because Venus and Libra rule the the female sexual organs and the kidneys, and they're very much to do with water. And Venus is quite interesting and in the body, because it's a lot to do with balance, which means homeostasis. And then across in Earth, we have mostly Saturn. Saturn rules like joints, skin, teeth, bones, that kind of thing. And it's about structure. And Saturn kind of comes down and is, mutually associated with the melancholic side, along with Mercury. So Mercury is to do with analysis and kind of digestion. It's digestion of ideas in Gemini and digestion of physically in Virgo. And Virgo's, very much, rules the intestines, and it's to do with purifying, and it's to do with analyzing. And Virgo, it's all about, if something isn't pure and it isn't right, then you throw it away. And that's what the process of digestion is in the body. So you see it fits really well with the melancholic. Then Mercury comes down into the air realm through Gemini, where it's much more about communication, dispersal of ideas. And also Geminis, they have, they're sort of known as the twins. And so there's the shadow side to Gemini as well. So you have on the one side, the chatty communicative Gemini, but they're known to have this shadow side as well, which fits well with the air element. And I like to put air/underworld, because all of the nasty bad shit happens in the air realm in Mappamundi. So I like to call that the underworld, and that's Pluto's influence. So Pluto is the lord, the lord of Hades, the underworld, and it's all to do with unconscious power and intensity. And, to a certain extent, there's conspiracy or scheming there, especially if it's an unconscious Pluto energy. And Neptune is assigned to the phlegmatic temperament because it's a lot about lacking boundaries. And on the one hand, there's a kind of idealism to Neptune. They, they would go out of their way to help others. And that can lead to just being sort of taken for granted. And then, of course, the moon is mostly associated with water. The lunar phases have a direct bearing on the ocean and the menstrual cycle. And the moon is very much to do with nutrition. It's, it rules the stomach through Cancer, and also the mammae, the breasts, and that sort of the connection to the mother archetype is very much from the moon. So you can see I've put some ages on here as well. So the womb, a kind of womb state here. And we've got feminine up here and mother. Right-brained or intuitive over here. Extrovert at the top. So the upper hemisphere, if you like, is the extroverted personality type. And down here is the introverted type. And so the air underworld is the unconscious or shadow side. It's where you're most uncompensated. You see all the fears through. So a lot of the Solanaceae remedies have a really strong air underworld component to them, like Stramonium especially is one of the biggest. And over here is more left-brained, logical, scientific-like structure, like achievement and ambition. You've got the masculine side and the father here. It's more about the wisdom and restraint as opposed to the sort of intuitive and artistic and sociable. Yeah. All making sense?
Yeah.
Any questions? All good? Cool. This is another map where I just sort of wanted to simplify things and show that, you know, like basically in astrology, you don't only have oppositions. And the way we've been taught Mappamundi so far, it's always like a polarity between choleric and phlegmatic or fire and air. But I think there can also be like right angled relationships. Like,
ask that about 6,000 squares. But that,
Yeah, so I think in the chart, where you get the most energy or tension is in the squares and the oppositions. Sextiles and trines are quite sort of smooth, and they're often to do with compatible elements, whereas squares are like incompatible elements.
It's a 90-degree angle.
That's the 90-degree angle. So, and that's that. So they basically, you know, I mentioned cardinal, fixed, mutable. Squares happen within each one of those. So you can have a cardinal square, a fixed square, or a mutable square. So squares in the Mappamundi are between melancholic and phlegmatic, or phlegmatic and sanguine. So personally, the way that I work with it is not to always think of them as in opposition, but sometimes to think, okay, this person is basically melancholic and phlegmatic, and that's where they are, and they're sort of, you know, hovering around between those two.
I didn't know anything about astrology, really, but are you saying that the birth chart shows you not just their characteristics, temperament, etc.? Is that where they are in life and they've got to make the most of it? Or is that their starting point and they should be moving and transforming and moving elsewhere?
Mm-hmm. I think of it as like a blueprint. It's like a snapshot of how things were when you were born. And so it's a little bit like your, you know, your DNA. And then you've got epigenetics, which is how you express your DNA. And that's obviously changes according to your journey. And absolutely it changes because the planet's always moving. So you can look at the transits that are happening. So that's how the sky now relates to how it was when you were born. And that can show that different parts of your psyche are being activated, or, you know, sort of like, activated is the right word. And that will bring up different things for you at different times.
Very complicated, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a massive system for sure. But like, I think the Mappamundi kind of allows you to synthesize it and simplify it. And it allows you to use it homeopathically, for sure.
But you can't just use someone's basic birth sign of, you know, Sagittarius or Pisces. It's not of use for this. No,
that's just the sun sign. So that's like the sun sign is your outward character, and it's like the role that you play in society. It's not your inner nature, and it's not like a synthesis of all the different aspects. So every planet rules a different sort of psychological aspect and also a physiological side too.
Okay.
So yeah, you need to look at how they relate, what elements are involved, mostly. But how the planets relate to each other is really key, and that's where you get oppositions or squares.
Okay.
So, you know, don't worry too much about that. You don't need to use a birth chart to use the Mappamundi, not at all. So this is, you know, I'll give you this website and you can just use it whenever you want. You know, have it open when you're doing cases. You know, you can look up these words, you know, if there's particular words a person's using or themes coming out in their case, you can, you know, you can map them onto this. I'm planning to build a search engine in Rader Opus that allows you to just put in words and it will show you which Mappamundi element or temperament or group come through with that based on these words and all the physicals and everything.
Are you going to release this as a little app in its own right?
Well, this is already released on just via a URL, but yeah, it's going to be, it'll be accessible in Rader Opus too. Yeah. But this is all open for anyone to use just like this. So this is just an idea. You were talking about how do other kingdoms and other models fit with Mappamundi. So this is my idea. It's kind of like, I can't really go into the whys and wherefores too much, but it goes beyond the scope of today a little bit. But maybe in another, you know, in another lesson, we can talk about it. I've actually got a book on animal families that's going to be published, which is exciting. So yeah, in maybe in a year, it will come out, and yeah, it'll explain it a lot more. Yeah, so why don't we probably need to start thinking about going into a case, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. How long have I got left? Half an hour. Yeah. So use this website. What should I put the URL in the chat now and you can all copy it? Is that a good idea? Let me go back to Zoom. In the notes. Oh, that's someone's chart. Yeah.
Wow. Did you do the app it?
That's the software that does that. Oh. That's a different application that I use for that.
Sharon, I'll send you a astrology site where you can put your birth data in and have a look at your chart.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. Trouble is, I don't know my time of birth at all, so I'll get lost.
And it will still, you can still see what the angles are.
There is a page online called Cafe Astrology. Cafe Astrology, Sharon.
Okay.
I have my chart there.
I might have a look. Frighten myself.
30 pages long.
Yeah, you'll be missing some information, mainly about where the moon is and where your ascendant would be. But you can still tell quite a lot.
Still meaningful.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. Okay, let's look at a case then, and I'll show you kind of how I use it. Let's just do that for now. Okay, this is someone who, actually, let me show you her questionnaire first. So I was going to say, do any of you use a questionnaire, but you're not quite there yet, are you? This is based on Rajan Sankaran's questionnaire, and it's absolutely massive. But some people don't fill it in at all. Some people do go to, you know, give you a lot of information. So,
and this you do before you see them.
Yep. Okay, so this is what they're coming with. IBS, essentially. Let me hide that. There we go. Yeah, so even as back as 7 or 8, they've been constipated and they've got IBS. So if I just show you quickly here, if I go to melancholic, you can see it's like black bile, liver, colon, constipation, atrophy. When you look at the, I was saying how Virgo really fits melancholic. These are all the qualities of Virgo, all the parts of the body that are affected. So malnutrition, dysentery, colic, constipation, tapeworm, abdominal, large and small intestines. So it totally rules the melancholic temperament there. So we already know that based on the chief complaint that she's had since 7 or 8, that there's probably going to be a melancholic aspect to this. There's colitis. There's also Crohn's, which is an autoimmune disease, and colitis. And so it's all in the digestive area that are being affected. Shyness, which we know is mostly belongs to which temperament?
It's a phlegmatic, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And weirdly, they joined the army. So that's the, you know, the opposite, the choleric side. But, you know, we won't know what the exact kind of, you'll see bits of everything, especially when you're, you know, dealing with peripheral things. And it won't be until you know what the kind of central and recurring themes are of the case that you'll know what the main weighting is. So don't worry if you see lots of different elements and temperaments coming through. Are you laughing at the diagram?
Just where the X is, it just made me laugh.
Yeah, she's done it really, really well. Yeah. So the chief complaint is IBS, and also the modality is being on my own makes me feel better. So which temperament would that be?
Melancholic.
Melancholic, again. Yep, perfect. So we know that it's physical and at the, you know, the level of the modality as well. So I'll just show you, I've kind of highlighted the bits that were important, I think. Yeah, dislikes consolation and sympathy, another melancholic aspect.
You've highlighted something about the jaw clicking there. Was that a particularly characteristic thing?
I don't know why I've highlighted that, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't seem very important now. Listening to others talk, that's, again, quite a phlegmatic quality. They want to support other people mostly. They don't sort of naturally take the limelight. You know, you saw them in the, they're in the introvert half of the map, yeah? Like being alone, feel peaceful, and like I have no responsibilities. So no responsibilities is quite interesting, because what kind of age would you say no responsibilities is?
Older. Oh, yeah. Teenager.
Yeah.
Yeah, could be teenager or even younger, but it's yeah, if someone's got an older, like inner age of development, they're going to like responsibility usually and take it on and be a bit more extroverted. Okay, there's a faintness and lying down makes it better. So which temperament?
That's sanguine, is it? No, I don't know.
That'd be phlegmatic.
That's phlegmatic.
Sanguine is quite energetic, extrovert. Phlegmatic is like, oh, I've got no energy. I just want to lie down and, you know, relax. Bit like, you know, when Nux Vomica has the delusion that someone's stolen his bed, because the bed is the place where you naturally lie down and get your rest, which is the phlegmatic. Phlegmatics want repose and tranquility rather than action and, you know, all of that industriousness. So there's a bit of the air element here with the acidity and the sourness, the dry sensation, atrophied tonsils. So what's atrophy come under?
Melancholic.
Melancholic, yep. Exactly. Nails are going brittle. Where would you put brittle?
Earth.
Yep. Great. Cool. Well, this is, you know, this is a perfectly good way of working, and you're already doing it with Mappamundi. So I guess the next, maybe the next thing you're thinking is, how do I, you know, make Earth into something a bit more? Well, if we go to Earth, actually, that's the Misha's one. If you go to Earth over here, you get my one, and it's got a bit on the astrology and the rulerships, and it's got repertory stuff, and then it's also got remedies and families there. So like row four, metals, bryonia. It's a bit, you know, it's a bit of an early stage. It's not complete yet, but it gives some ideas of different families and remedies that fit there.
Why is it Earth and not melancholic then? Why aren't you looking at melancholic for remedies for Earth?
I was just saying we mentioned brittle, and so I just
mentioned that. Sorry.
No, it's much more of a melancholic case. So I don't think I've really got long enough to go through the whole case. But what I'll do is I'll show you how I work with the patient file in RadarIPS. So I type all my notes, and that, you know, especially when you're using Zoom, that works well. And you can see over here, I've like this column on the right allows you to add your own like tags. So I've added my own Mappamundi ones. And when someone says something that I think that's phlegmatic, I can mark it up as phlegmatic. So this is talking about her husband. He poo-pooed what I did. His life more important than mine. So it's a yielding kind of state, allowing someone else, or, you know, you don't necessarily say allowing, but the dynamic was the partner was more important. So that's quite phlegmatic. So, you know, she was the one at home, and he was the one out there being more extroverted. So what I can do is right click on my patient file, and I can limit to all of the things I've marked as phlegmatic. And then that's all I see. So I like listening to people in my work, as a friend, people they offload to me. So that's a really phlegmatic quality, to be the person who others offload to. And you sort of get that, you know, they're yielding, they're tranquil, they're laid back, they are introverted. And so for others to, you know, tell them what's going on, and yeah, see how that works, how that fits. Not very good at saying no to people. So that's the kind of classic doormat sort of phlegmatic side. You know, it's a real simplification, but it's an easy way to remember it, you know, with something like doormat or, yeah.
So how do you decide which is the dominant pole or whatever?
You can see already that there's loads of sentences here where I thought phlegmatic fitted. And so
you don't physically map it onto the circle and just see, no.
What I would probably do is make a mind map and put the position of the different statements, sorry, where they belong on the Mappamundi. So I would open up Simple Mind. I don't think I did it for her, but that's a different case.
Is this on Radar?
No, this is a program called Simple Mind. So I could take the other thing I can do is sort according to intensity. And I'll take all of this, copy, go into here, and then paste there, just resize it. And I put that down in the phlegmatic quadrant because I know it's there. And then, you know, I can then go on and put in the other aspects. And this is doing it very quickly. Normally I'd probably make several bubbles and organize them a bit more.
That's nice, isn't it? It's very visual. You can see it immediately. Is that a program you can get, you know, anyone can get it?
Yeah, it's real cheap. It's like 20 quid or something. You just search Google for Simple Mind.
I think Victoria uses it.
I use mine now, but it's very similar.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's great. Let me hide that again. So, Simple Mind. Should come up first. There it is. That's it. You can get a free version of it.
Okay. Brilliant. Thank you.
That's all right. Yeah, super useful. So you've got here, independence kicks in. So that's not very phlegmatic, but feeling vulnerable and that, you know, needy, you know, vulnerable and needy, that's very phlegmatic. Don't want to confirm that by avoiding people. Embarrassing, I'd say, is also quite phlegmatic. It's like, basically, Kalk Carb is a very good archetype for the phlegmatic temperament. And so stage 2 of the periodic table, as a kind of general rule, suffers from being observed and embarrassed and ridiculed. So I would say those are all part of the phlegmatic temperament. Naivety, I would say, sanguine has a sort of naivety to it as well. And you can see that sanguine and phlegmatic both share water. Just one is hot and one is cold. So you can always think of it that way. Helplessness is also very phlegmatic. Okay, so we know already that in this case, from the physicals, there's the melancholic side, and from the mentals, there's the phlegmatic side. But let's have a look at the melancholic statements. There's not so many here, but she says, my default is withdrawal, and I don't answer text messages, so solitude, melancholic. Could go into a depression or low mood, feels lonely. Like being truly on my own. Yeah, I like to, go off and camp in my Land Rover, get rid of pressure and responsibility. So those, you could put a bit more in the choleric realm, or you could think of them as part of the kingdom themes potentially. So it's about using the Mappa Mundi, in addition to your other systems and just repertorizing and, it's one of the tools in your toolkit. Yeah. So mostly in her case, it's the physicals which really confirm the melancholic temperament. So when I show you one of the maps that I made, of the minerals, here it is. I've put the lanthanides in the melancholic because the lanthanides are a lot about self-analysis, an inward looking nature, mastery of the self, also service to others because they're often like therapists, freedom from tradition, philosophy of health, a wounded healer. These are some of the themes that I associate with the lanthanides. I put Chiron and also Mercury and Saturn rule the melancholic. So if I open Jan Scholten's book on the lanthanides and then navigate to the you see here, it's indicated in Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis and autoimmune diseases. And it's interesting because I'm sure where he went with this was that lanthanides are about autonomy and about wanting your independence and not wanting to be observed or sort of interrupted. So that's where this kind of theme of autoimmunity comes from. So a lot of the physicals associated with the melancholic temperament fit with the lanthanides, as well as the theme of self-analysis and looking inwardly. Okay, so I sort of thought to myself that there's some qualities of a lanthanide in this person. She's a homeopath as well. She overanalyzes. She spends a lot of time by herself. So this is just giving you a bit of an insight into my thought process. We can also look at things which I thought were quite mineral. It's a limit to the mineral statements. So when she's at capacity, I slightly ignore things. My world shrank. Why did I allow that to happen? So she puts it back onto herself. I'll be hard on myself. It must be me. Why not care about me? Through the whole consultation, she mostly talked about, referring it back to herself and her inner weakness, which we know is, from Rajan's work, that it's a lot about looking at the fault within themselves. It's a very mineral thing. And they want to, they have trouble forming a bond, and without a bond, they don't feel stable. So in this case, the patient's is a widow, husband died 4 years ago, and relationships are not easy at all. Okay, so that all kind of goes towards the mineral, and they're very self-referential in the way they talk about their problems. So if we look to Let me just see. I can show you on here. Ah. 2D. So Anna Vivarka is really good on kingdom stuff as well. So this is her. When she talks about 2D, she's talking about minerals and sarcodes and gemstones and those groups. So it's all about my existence. The patients answer the questions with definitions. They don't use hand gestures quite so much, usually. Little facial expression or body language. No or very few modalities. One main problem, and it's to do with function, capacity, roles. You mentioned capacity there. I can or I can't do it. I need or I lack or I miss. I'm unstable, losing or wanting grip, dependent. Okay, so we're kind of moving into a kind of understanding here of this patient as being, on the one hand, quite melancholic, which we could associate especially with her pathology, the lanthanides, and also, you know, a quite a phlegmatic nature too, which I was saying fits with stage two and calcarb and the mollusks. So if we go to back to my map, you can see that phlegmatic fits with stage three, water with stage two. I mean, this is my figuring out on it. It's certainly not set in stone. It's just an idea. But this is also based on astrology. And there's another document I'm working on that's sort of work in progress that I'm happy to send to you, and you can check it all out. Okay. You all with me so far? Any questions? Yeah.
At what point do you actually repertorize at all? You don't bother?
Yeah. No, I repertorized it. Absolutely. So when it comes to repertorizing, let me just see if I can show you on here. So ridicule was seriously important, and the feeling of being observed, embarrassed, humiliated. What remedy does it sound like? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's fine. Burita carb, did you say?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice one. Yeah. Okay. So those were really important things. And when I repertorize, when a case like this, I do quite a thematic repertorization. So I use Scher's Q repertory, or I combine a lot of rubrics, or I use my own repertory that I've made, which is going to be released very soon, actually. Mm-hmm. So that's a Mappamundi one I'm working on. It's not quite ready, but this one is my thematic repertory. Yeah. So it's like Q-rep, basically. So one of the ones I used in this case was forsaken, alone, and dependent. Dependency was, you know, quite a big part of the case there. So it's like a combination rubric of all of these into one broad theme, so which makes it, you know, a big rubric, and it means you're more likely to get the right remedy in there. That's the basic idea. So that's the kind of repertorization I did. Low self-esteem is a rubric in Q-rep that I combined with mine. Feeling of being laughed at, like her family all, you know, teased and laughed and humiliated her. There's a need for guidance or support. I think that was, you know, she sort of just fell into going into the army. It just sort of happened to her. The dream of being observed and the real fear and of being observed that would aggravate all of the physical symptoms. Yeah, so you can see Burita carb coming up there straight away. And I just muted myself. Can you hear me? Yeah. Yeah. I always forget that the key commands change when you're in Zoom. Burita carb, it's in the gold series. So there's a lot of, like, you know, gold series is about responsibility and power and, you know, sort of control. And, you know, those themes aren't there in her. So I sort of looked through all of these remedies. So you can see, because I've used such big rubrics, I've got 35 that cover all of those themes. So when you work in this way, it helps if you have quite a lot of knowledge, both of like either of kingdoms or of like the materia medica and the essences. So, and it's about pattern recognition. Yeah. So I've got Bhutakarb stage 2, Pulsatilla, very phlegmatic, and also earth water. You can go through and do a bit of a, you know, Mappamundi analysis. Lycopodium's also quite earth water axis, but it has quite fire and air as well because of the ego and you know, it's very good like lung and respiratory remedy, so that puts it into the air realm. So you can go through doing that, but quite often I find that the remedies over this side that are less well known are that, you know, often you'll find an interesting one, and Lanthanum metallicum comes through just on that repertorization, which is interesting in itself. So then I go to Jan's book and I'm going to look up Lanthanum. So it's about insecurity, hesitation. It's as if they want to look in all directions at the same moment. They search for possibilities and fear threats. They fear being ridiculed and bullied. Jesting is a big keynote. People tend to tease them automatically. They're ridiculed a great deal. Now, this was really true for her. A lot about ridicule. Let's just find the exact bit in the text which was about that. Yeah. So I don't remember my mum ever hugging me. It was dad who would brush my hair. She would ridicule me over being a daddy's girl. If mum was about, I wouldn't get a hug. Brother and sister are not affectionate. She's very estranged from her family. So from an early age, I had a brick outhouse. I was so desperate for some space. I just wanted to be on my own. So that's, you know, melancholic, and you can also see lanthanide qualities there for wanting space and autonomy. I was really naive, just went along with things, did a college course, recruitment video. So naivety, you can see here I've put also left side of the periodic table where one looks for support, one is more dependent, one looks for guidance. Yeah. So all making sense? Happy. Yeah. So the other thing that I found when I was working with this case was that there was quite a strong muriaticum component there. And hopefully I can show you why. So when I showed you the map that I made for the periodic stages, I've put stage 17 and stage 3 as being phlegmatic. Because stage 17, the halogens and the muriaticums, it's about selflessness, devotion and sacrifice, martyring yourself, victim or victimized, lack of boundaries, surrender, rescuing. So those are all strong qualities. And what you get basically on the periodic table is, let me just... So you have the dependency and need for guidance on the left side. And then on the right side, you have, you know, need for independence and a need to sort of get away, because, you know, when you think about a salt between a cation and an anion, so the left side and the right side, the left side's only got like one electron in its outer shell to contribute to the relationship, whereas the halogen's got 7. So the halogen's much more experienced, much more, it's got much more to offer. And so they tend to want to break away and get their independence from the kind of neediness of the other side, of the left-hand side. Maybe that makes sense. Have you done a lot of work on the periodic table yet, or is that... going to happen if we...
We've done some.
Yeah.
Not
great. Yeah. Great. So let me just stop the screen share a minute. How do I do that? Oh, was I not sharing my screen? No, I was. Yeah. Hey, there you are. So yeah, she received Lanthanum muriaticum rather than Metallicum, because I could see the other side in her, the like independence, and also like, you know, the mother muriaticum can be a bit of a like archetype for the mother, Yeah, the you know, that whole archetype of caring. Yeah, and it also has, you know, like hydrochloric acid is essential in the digestive process, and all of her complaints were in the digestive area. So
is that what it is?
Hydrochloric acid is muriaticum, yeah. Yeah. It's chlorine, basically. So,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. There's loads to learn. I didn't know it until someone told me.
Sodium and chlorine.
Sorry?
Sodium and chlorine.
Who's mentoring?
Is it sodium and chlorine?
Ah, that would be natrium. Yeah, natrium muriaticum. But yeah, hydrochloric acid is hydrogen and chlorine. And oxygen, probably. Yes. So yeah, she had LM4, which is roughly equivalent to 30C, because it's a chronic condition, autoimmune Crohn's disease, pretty, you know, tricky to treat basically. So I wanted to, LMs give you longevity. You can take it every day or every other day. And because she's a homeopath, I said, take one dose and I trust you to take it when you need it. Normally I'm, you know, I have to guide people more, but she's been taking it mostly every other day. And I have one follow-up with her from a month, and you know, the digestive symptoms have changed. They've not gone away, but she goes to the toilet a lot less, sort of going more on the side of constipation, if anything now. You know, if she gets anxious, that still brings, you know, it's like an anticipatory anxiety that still brings on the need to, you know, go to pass stool. The flatulence is still, you know, an issue. If there's anxiety, there's the, you know, there's more wind, and then there's, when you're thinking about that, you get more anxious, and then it's a vicious circle. But in terms of her feeling more comfortable in like the new relationship she's exploring, that's been going really well. And let me just see from the follow-up what she said. Yeah. She says, the remedy's helping me to be more true to myself and not hide who I am. I haven't laughed so much in a long time, feel way less held back in that way. Although I do still overanalyze, I've been more able to go with the flow. I can't wait. Yeah. Can't wait to speak. Feels really positive. And doing less sort of, you know, people are annoying her less. And yeah, that's it really. That's the one. So I'm really hoping that did shed a bit of light on how you can use the elements and map them in the, you know, in a more practical way.
No, it's been great.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Also, it seems to be that you can use it as kind of to plot a character,
yeah,
rather than going for rubrics and stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah. You wouldn't put their character in the rubrics, would you? Because it's not pathology.
There are different ways. Like, I would say you can repertorize according to the person's like disposition, but it's a different type of repertorization. And you put it in a different clipboard, and it's like more of a thematic repertorization. It's that would be my take on it. But you don't necessarily have to if you know that you're using a system like Mapamundi. You hold that image in your mind that you want to see in the remedy that there's either, you know, ideally the psychological and the physical affinities of that. You know, the melancholic temperament in this case. Yeah.
Amazing.
Very good.
Cool. Any other questions, thoughts?
I have a question completely not random, but you did, when you taught us recently, you were treating that young man who had drug problems.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever get the remedy to him, and how's he doing?
This was the ignis alcoholis patient.
That he had been admitted.
Yeah. Yeah, I did get the remedy to him. And yeah, he had it. He basically got out of that institution really quickly and went back to stay with his mum. And he was obviously like cogent enough and lucid enough for them to feel it's fine for him to leave. Okay. And then he had the remedy when he came back, and he did communicate with me quite a lot. And, you know, he said the remedy helped him feel very different. And since then, he sort of, they did put him on a bit of medication, and then he came off it. And basically, he sort of, you know, pops up every now and again and messages me. But as far as I'm aware, he's doing much better now. So I think it was really like an acute flare up based on the bereavement that he had, and he just couldn't deal with it. So
that's nice to know.
Yeah, definitely. I think you know, diagnoses do help, but they also, you know, they sort of make you feel like it's untreatable somehow, but there's still a human being there. And sorry.
That's what you gave him. It was an interesting remedy.
It was fire.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a really interesting remedy. Yeah, setting alcohol alight and then burning the alcohol down until you have a tiny bit, and then making the remedy from it.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, really interesting.
Fascinating.
Yes.
Well, thank you. This has been so interesting.
Good. Yeah. Really, yeah, my pleasure. And feel free to email me directly or Jen, and I'll send you a load of stuff.
That'd be great.
Really nice
for organizing before.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thank you.
Cool. Yeah, thanks for organizing
it. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.